But the main thing we want to do is focus on the Word of God and see what it has to say to us about families. I have a big family. I have a wonderful woman who's been very patient with me for 25 years now. And we have 6 kids. They're all 4 years apart. This will be the first presidential election that we'll ever go through since we've been married that my wife wasn't pregnant. I've got a 22-year-old daughter who's married and living in Knoxville, Tennessee, and just had our first grandchild. And then I've got an 18-year-old son and a 14-year-old daughter, a 10-year-old daughter, a 6-year-old son, and, or no, he just turned 7 the other day, and a 3-year-old son. And I get asked, the main topic I've been asked to speak on the last couple of years repeatedly is to go do lessons on the family, particularly on child training. But the thing is, when I speak on this topic, it's the same thing basically that I used to say when I was 21 and single and was asked to speak on the topic for the first time. Because where do we go to find out about families? To the Word of God. And I have met and run into people, and you may have too, who, when a person is a Christian, maybe they have a spouse that's not a Christian, and they're jealous that that person seems to put the Lord above them. And what a foolish, foolish attitude. Because what's the truth of the matter? When a woman puts God above her family, who benefits? Her family. When a man puts God above his family, who benefits? Because it is from God that we learn and are reminded so fundamentally what we need to do in regards to our families. So this, as in other things, we need to look to the Word of God. We're going to focus mostly tonight on husbands. But first we want to talk about marriage in general. And do I hit both of these orange buttons or just one? Both? Okay. And of course, to talk about marriage, we need to go back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. God has created Adam, and it's not good for man to be alone. And so, Eve is created from the rib in his side. In Genesis 2:24, it says, "For this reason shall a man leave his father and mother, and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." The institution of marriage is older than government. It's older than the church. It is foundational to society and the human condition. We have a lot of people in our culture today who don't understand the importance of family. A lot of people who would like to look more to individual promiscuity and sexual liberty without thinking about the consequences. A lot of people who would like to look to the state and government to care for people in ways that families should be caring for people. But when we go back to the Word of God, this fundamental relationship here that is so important, we're going to be talking about some statistics in a few moments. Well, in fact, let me just go ahead and get to that. We'll be talking a lot about parenting on Sunday, but one of the biggest problems in our culture today is children being brought into this world without fathers. So much of the crime that is committed in this country is a result of fatherless children. And I'm not talking about tragic situations simply where the father has died. He wanted to be there, but, you know, death took him. I'm talking about people who live promiscuous lifestyles and they're having children out of wedlock without concern for the children. And let me give you just a few statistics on that. Let's start with poverty. These are some statistics for New York City. Single parent families account for more than 2/3 of all poor families there. Only 3.5% of married families where the husband works full time are poor. So what's the solution to poverty in New York City? The husband being with the family and getting a job. 52.9% of all children in female-headed families are in poverty. Nearly 70% of juveniles in state reform institutions come from fatherless homes, as do 43% of prison inmates. And you can find this at www.cato.org testimony. This was some testimony presented before Congress. And they said, research indicates direct correlation between crime rates and the number of single-parent families in the neighborhood. Now, let me say this before we go on. Sometimes tragedy does strike, or someone betrays a family, and a mom needs to raise those children because the husband has died, or he has betrayed her and he's run off. And that mom needs our support, and she's got a tough job to do, and a lot of moms have done a wonderful job of doing that and stepping up to the plate and doing not only their task, but task that their husband, if he would have stuck around, should be doing, but he ran off with some other woman somewhere else. And we salute those women. But those women would not recommend that that's the preferable way that you would do things. What they would like is for their husband to have been an honorable man and stuck around and done his part. Or, of course, if there was a husband that fell ill and died, of course, the longing to have him there. But that's not the what we're talking about here is just an epidemic situation. Let me read a little bit more. In a study of over 450 alcoholics and 80 heroin addicts, it was discovered that the absent father in such circumstances is very typical. In fact, it's the rule rather than the exception. Fatherless homes account for 63% of youth suicides, 90% of homeless runaway children, 85% of children with behavior problems, 71% of high school dropouts, 85% of youths in prison. We were talking about this in our moral issues in cultural trends class in Pennsylvania on Wednesday night. And we got some people that work in the court system. And they said, yeah, that's just general. The kids that come through where there's issues before the court, is by far, most of the time, there's just one parent there, not both. What I'm trying to say by this is that family is important, and we've got a lot of people in this country that think that family's not important, and we're suffering consequences for it. The country financially, crime in cities, a lot of problems are coming out because of this. God said, Jesus talks about this very verse here in Genesis 2:24 when he talks about marriage. Let's remember the permanence of marriage. In Luke 16:18, some of the passages will mention, in Matthew will mention an exception, but first let's notice the rule. Luke chapter 16, verse 18. Everyone that puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery. He that marries one that is put away from a husband commits adultery. Mark chapter 10. The Pharisees come asking about divorce. And Jesus said, verse 6, from the beginning of creation, male and female, he made them. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother. I'm in Mark chapter 10, verse 7 now. A man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so that there are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. In the house, the disciples asked him again of the matter, and he said to them, whosoever puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery against her. If she herself put away her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. And then similar text in Matthew 19 where an exception clause is included. Verse 9, I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife except for fornication and shall marry another committeth adultery. And Matthew chapter 5:32 similarly, and 1 Corinthians 7:39 where it talks about the woman being bound to the husband as long as she lives. And lastly, look at Hebrews chapter 13 verse 4, let marriage be had in honor among among all, and let the bed be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Fornication being illicit sexual relationships, adultery being a particular kind of illicit sexual relationship that is also a betrayal of the marriage covenant, where a wife cheats on her husband, a husband cheats on the wife, etc., etc. Let marriage be had in honor among all. Is marriage held in much honor in our culture today? Is the bed undefiled? Well, most people get married and go on honeymoon. I'm not sure quite what the point is other than that it's a vacation, because nothing's changed from the way they've been behaving for a long time before. People don't respect marriage. People don't respect fathers. How are fathers depicted in commercials, movies, and television shows? Think about that for a minute. Who's usually the idiot? And when there's a family scene, who's going to be the idiot? It's going to be the father. Why is that? Families are not respected. The marriage bond is not respected. You look at the way a lot of people in the medium, in the entertainment media, particularly entertainment industry, live their lives. And used to, a number of years ago, they would just, you know, they'd get married, get divorced, get married, get divorced, get married, get divorced. Now, a lot of them just don't even bother with the marrying part. And they seem to like to get children. I read an article recently by a nanny in England talking about that basically she was saying a lot of the wealthy people over there shouldn't even have kids. Because she said for some of them it's just a fashion accessory. You know, they don't want to take care of them. And she said that, like, one family, after she'd cared, worked for them, and then she quit, and she'd been away from them for, like, half a year, she'd still get, like, a call in the middle of the night. The little girl is crying and wants a bedtime story read to her, and the rich parents are calling and saying, please, we'll give you 20 pounds, read her a bedtime story over the phone. People that don't want to spend time with their kids. There's a lot of problems out there. But let's start focusing now on the husband. First off, notice the responsibility. Leave and cleave. Young men, when you get married, do the leaving part and then do the cleaving part. Don't change that order. There's a lot of people that start cleaving. They begin the one flesh relationship when they have no right to. They begin that most intimate and vulnerable of relationships before they've made the commitment to be, you know, bound in marriage, you know, and say I do, and be bound before God and man in that bond. But then also, even after that, there's some people that stay dependent on their parents. And the passage says, leave and cleave. When you marry, you are beginning your own family. You still need to honor your parents. You still need to respect your parents. But you are beginning your family. This is the pattern. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. How is he to treat his wife? Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Later in our series, we'll talk about the instructions to the wife earlier in this. But husbands, after the wives have been told to be in subjection to the husband, look what the husband is told, verse 7. Ye husbands, in like manner, dwell with your wives, what? According to knowledge, giving honor to the woman as unto the weaker vessel, as being also joint heirs of the grace of life, to the end that your prayers be not hindered. According to knowledge, There can be a lot of things to think about in that phrase. But I want to talk for a couple of minutes about one thing, and that is understanding that women are different than men, and men are different than women. And long live the difference. There's been some people that have tried to say that there's not really much difference between men and women. There's a difference between men and women. That's one reason why men are attracted to women and women are attracted to men. They're supposed to be different. God made them different. I heard about one family, they gave, somebody gave little Barbie dolls to the boys. And they promptly pulled off the arms and legs and used them for guns and started shooting each other. That's not what little girls do with dolls. That's what these little boys did with dolls. We are made differently. And husbands, sometimes we can get irritated with our wives. You remember there was a movie, was it My Fair Lady or something? It was some movie set in England where with the professor trying to get the girl to learn how to speak British. You remember when he sings the song, Why Can't Women Be More Like Men? They're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be different. Eve was a help meet, a help suitable for Adam. There are some things that men are better at, and there are some things that women are better at. When you were little and you skinned your knee, who did you want to run to for nurture, primarily? I mean, if dad's there and mom's not, that's fine, dad'll do. But if dad's over there and mom's over there, which one did you run to, probably, when you got hurt? Women, by nature, are generally a bit more nurturing than men. There's lots of things. My wife and I one time read a book about the brain and gender, and there were tests in there. And we tested, and she came out very, very woman, and I came out very, very male. And good, I'm glad. But there's some subtle things, and this won't be an absolute. I mean, there's variations to this. But just to kind of show some innate differences, let me point out a few of the things that were in there. If a cat meows in the distance, and you hear it, not real distinctly, but you hear it, would you, A, be able to point right to the general area where the cat is, B, know it was kind of over there somewhere, or C, not know where the cat is? Most women know where the cat is. Most men don't know where the cat is. Finding things on a cluttered desk. Who can do that better? Usually, it's the women. And that's the way it is in my family. You know, it's like, where? I don't know where it is. It's on the desk. No, it's not on the desk. It's on the desk. No, it's not. I'm looking right here at the desk. It's not on the desk. You know, she can find it right away. That's something women are usually better at. Directions. Does you usually know what way is north, south, east, west? If I point right this direction right here, how many of the fellas know if that's north, south, east, or west? Fellas kind of keep up with that. How many of the women know? Some do, but a lot of women, how do women usually, and they had a news special about this recently too, how do women usually keep up with directions? By landmarks. You know, it's like you go to the Dairy Queen and turn left, you know, then you go down to the 7-Eleven and turn right. Whereas guys, you know, well, you go north on Route 11, you know, until you get 15, then you go east a couple miles, and we're just somewhat different. Women are oftentimes better at multitasking than men. It doesn't mean that all women are great at that. It doesn't mean that no men are. But fellas, if you're working on the lawnmower and you're trying to get the blades off, you know, to sharpen it, and one of them is about to round off, how many things are you focused on? One. But mom can be in there on the phone advising a friend who's got a problem, you know, changing the baby's diaper, remembering that the brownies need to come out of the oven, and several things at once. And women are just generally good at that. Men and women are different. Men and women deal with communication differently. I'd recommend a book to you. if you'd like to read that type of thing. Some of you may have read it. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. It talks about the difference between communication in men and women. And it puts it this way. It says, the thesis of the book is that all men are from Mars and women are from Venus, and they live one way here and they live one way there, and then they got to know about each other and attracted to each other, but they have problems because they're different. On Mars, it describes men, fellas, if you talk to another fellow about a problem, like if you say, hey, I'm trying to get this blade off my lawnmower, but the bolt is rounded off. Why are you saying that to your friend? Because you want to vent, and you want him to say, oh, poor you. No, what are you wanting? You want a solution. What can I do there? You think maybe drill it out? That's what guys are looking for when they bring up problems. Otherwise, you don't call and tell your friend, and then the blade, I don't know. That's not the way guys do. Women, when they're having problems, oftentimes they want to talk about their problem. Why? Because they want to tell somebody the problems they're going through. And the book describes how, and you may recognize this in your own life, a woman, she's wanting to tell about what she's going through and share that with somebody, and her husband says, we'll do this. And does she like that? Guys? I'm seeing a head shaking. No, that's not what she wanted, is it? See, I don't want you to solve it for me. And the guy's thinking, then why'd you bring up the problem? We don't like sitting around talking about problems, right? We got to deal with them sometimes. Get over with it. Women are different. And we need to understand some of those differences. But we also need to understand our responsibilities before God. We're to give honor to the weaker vessel. What do you think that means, weaker vessel? It could be that they're not as physically strong as us, right? There's a few exceptions to that. I know a couple, and she's bigger than him. She's taller than him. She's bigger than him. And one time he was sick, and he was just hurting, or I don't know if he was sick or his back was out or what. So she just reached down, just scooped him up and took him away, to the doctor or whatever. And she said, he wouldn't be able to do that with me because he's a pretty small guy and she's a pretty good sized woman. But usually, if we had a cage match here, the men against the women, who would win? If you had an arm wrestling match with your wife, who would win? I'm going to say it's usually the guy. But I think that may be not the main point here. I'll show you why in a second. Is it weaker because they're less intelligent? You remember in 8th grade, 9th grade, and the girls were making all the good grades, and, us guys are still, trying to figure out the multiplication tables or something? Men aren't necessarily smarter than women. Look at the context in 1 Peter. The context here of submission started where? Go back up to chapter 2, verse 13. 1 Peter 2, look at the text here with me, please. 1 Peter 2:13, who is told to be in submission to who in 1 Peter 2, verse 13? One of you brothers call out the answer to these questions. Who's to be subject to who there? Yeah, the citizen to the government. Then in verse 18, who's to be in subjection to who? Servants to their masters. Then in chapter 3, wives to their husbands. Is the governor of Nebraska necessarily physically stronger than you? Are the senators or the president or the representatives necessarily physically stronger than you? Are they necessarily smarter than you? Nope. Not always. How are they stronger than you? Yeah. Their position of authority. Servants and masters. Was every master physically stronger than the servant? No. Was every master superior in intelligence? No. How is he stronger? His position of authority. Husbands and wives. Usually the man is physically stronger. Sometimes, she had a higher SAT, sometimes he had a higher SAT. But what is so is that she is in the weaker position authority-wise. She is the one assigned with the responsibility to submit to the husband. Authority-wise, which is the context here, she is in the weaker position. Husbands, we need to give honor to the wife and take knowledge and remember that she is in the weaker position and not take advantage of that. And one good way to challenge ourselves on that is to ask this question right here. What happens halfway through a football game? They change direction, don't they? First half of the game, you were going for that end zone, and then after halftime, it goes the other way, right? What if God called halftime and said, okay, we've tried it this way for a few thousand years, now we're going to switch. From here on out, husbands, be in subjection to your wives as unto the Lord. And that's what he said, and then that's it. Suddenly, fellas, you and I find ourselves where? The weaker vessel. And where's the authority? With our wives. And what is our God-given obligation? To do what she says. At that point, gentlemen, how interested would we be in what kind of a leader she wants to be? Would we be hoping that she would be considerate in her leadership, or a dictator? Would we be hoping she would think about our feelings and maybe care about our opinions and input, or would we want her to rule with an iron hand and see how much of her, you know, she could throw around her weight? I think we'd be really interested and hopeful that she understood what proper leadership is instead of just trying to get to be boss, don't you? So what should we be doing right now? She is the weaker vessel. We should be taking knowledge of the fact that we are the one responsible for leadership. She is the one obliged to submit, and we need to be leading in a way that is thoughtful and good and for what is good for the family. And giving honor, and we'll talk more about this when we get down to Ephesians 5, giving honor to her. I imagine a lot of us, I know that I don't show enough honor to my wife for everything that she does. I appreciate so many things she does, but it's so easy sometimes to take some of those things for granted. Do we show enough honor to our wives? If somebody asked your wife, do you feel honored? What would she say? And ladies, no elbowing your husband right now. Let him think about this. If somebody asked your wife, do you feel taken for granted? What would she say? And if you know, yes, she feels honored. No, she doesn't feel taken for granted. Good. If you know, no, I don't think she feels very honored, and she probably feels taken for granted, then change that starting tonight and give honor to her. And if you're not sure, and start giving honor to her and be sure how she feels. That's our responsibility before God, giving honor to the woman so that our prayers be not hindered. Colossians 3:20 puts another responsibility we have. Be not bitter against them. Can men be bitter? Yeah. Can women be bitter? Yes, they can. It's kind of interesting some of the things that Paul says to each gender. Like, for instance, Who does he tell, don't provoke your children to wrath? Did he say that to the moms or to the dads? The dads. Because there's going to be somebody that's maybe too hard and overbearing on the kids, more often than not. If somebody is doing that, more often than not, who's it going to be? Maybe the dad. Husbands, be not bitter against your wives. And look here in Ephesians 5. Turn and read that passage with me. Ephesians 5, verse 25. Verse 22 said, wives, be in subjection to your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. But now look at verse 25. Husbands, boss your wives? No. Husbands, take for granted your wives? No. What does it say? Love your wives. How? Everybody look at this verse. Husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. That's a sacrificial love. That's not, hey, I'm the man. I get to be head of the house. That means I get to have everything my way. Guess what? We're not getting you that new dryer you need. I'm getting some new tires for my monster truck. Guess what? That documentary you wanted to watch about, you know, the pilgrims or whatever? Wrestling. You know, it's... God didn't put men in charge so that we get to get everything our way. You think about making vegetable casserole? No, you're not. You're making this. That's not why God meant put men in charge. You know why we need to be in charge? Think back to politicians and kings and such. Some men, when they get in that position, they understand what? I have a responsibility to these people that I lead and represent. And they work hard to do what's good. Other fellas, when they got in that position, what did they do? They just tax people to death, you know, to build, you know, another golden carriage or add some more turrets to their castle or buy some more lands and stuff. And they just abuse the people to get more and more. Which of those is a good leader? One is a good leader, the other what? Is just abusing a position of leadership. Sacrificial and serving leader. Love your wife like Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. He sacrificed himself. The night before he was crucified, what did he pray? If there be any way possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will but thine be done. He sacrificed for who? He gave himself up for the church. We're in charge to lead and provide, and we need to love our families and give ourselves up for them, not to use our position simply to get our way and monopolize and boss and bully and such. Submission. Whose responsibility is it? Think about that for just a second. Where is the verse in the Bible that tells men, make your wife submit to you? Does anybody remember that verse? Any of you fellows remember that verse? I don't remember that verse either. I haven't seen that verse in the Bible. Who is told, who's given the responsibility and submission? Wives are told, submit yourself to your husband. Husbands have the responsibility to lead, but it's not his job to make his wife obey her. It's her job to obey him. And you know what? That's going to be a lot easier for her when he's a sacrificial and serving leader. But if he's not, you remember that list that we had in 1 Peter about submission? Did it say, be subject to the kings only when you think they're really fair? Is that what it said? No. Did it say, be subject to your master only if he's a good and kind master? Is that what it said? No. Did it say, only be in subjection if he's a good Christian? No. The citizen is to obey. The servant was to obey. The wife is to obey. But gentlemen, let's make it easy on them by providing a leadership that they respect. Is it easier for us to obey a president or a governor that we respect? Yeah, it is, isn't it? Is it easier to work for a boss that treats you fairly and you respect? Yes, it is. Let's do that for our wives. Remembering your vows. Think back to your wedding day. And you younger fellows, think about when you get married and you're standing there and they say, okay, here's the vows. Those are important things. Fellas, did we promise to love and cherish our wife? Do you promise to love and cherish? You remember that line? Probably was in your vows. Ephesians 5, 28 and 29 says, he that loves his own wife loves himself. No man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. Again, does your wife feel cherished? If not, start planning to do some things to let her know that you do cherish her. You've heard the old joke about the fellow that the wife says, Dad, why, how come you never tell me that you love me? He said, I told you 35 years ago, and if I change my mind, I'll let you know. That's not worth much, is it? Cherish. Love and cherish. 1 Peter 3, 7, we already talked about honor. Now let's talk about this one. Remember when we said those vows, do you promise to keep yourself to her and her alone? Something like that was probably in your wedding vows. And the principle is certainly in the scripture. In the first place, do keep yourself to her. 1 Corinthians 7, 5, be available to her. Sometimes women cut off the physical relationship and deny the husband the physical love and romance that he deserves in his life. Sometimes men do it to their wives. Neither is right. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 3, let the husband render unto the wife her due, likewise also the wife to the husband. The wife does not have power over her own body, but the husband, and likewise the husband also has not power over his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be consent for a season, that you may give yourselves under prayer, and may be together again, that Satan tempt you not. To be available for your spouse. But I think usually most men are available physically to their spouses. Problem is, they're sometimes not content to be available just for their spouse. What did Job say? First, let's come and talk about the problem of adultery back in Hebrews 13 and the other passages. I was reading a book today, and it's written by a fellow who used to be very, very left-wing. His parents were communist activists, and he grew up with a very leftist sense, and everything about conservative people was all wrong and everything. And then he had a child, and he started changing the way he looked at the world and such. And one of his friends, kind of a 60s hippie type, and still had the ponytail and everything, decided when he was, on up in the middle age to just leave his wife and son, teenage son, and take off with a younger woman. And he talks about just the betrayal there and what the son said. And the son had been doing real well in school, and his grades started doing not too well. He was about 18 at the time. And somebody said, you know, well, just give up with this more difficult class and take something easier. So he said, no, I'm not going to be a quitter like my dad. And one of the leftist friends said, well, I guess he's earned the right to be judgmental. You know what? I don't think you have to be betrayed by that fellow to be able to point at that fellow and say he was wrong. It's just wrong. There's people that do that. There's men that do that. That betray the wife of their youth. Proverbs 5. Let's go to that first, and then we're going to come back to this. Look at Proverbs chapter 5. After saying, stay away from the adulterous woman, it says in verse 15, using a metaphor here of just be with your own wife. Verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord. He watches all his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of sin. He will die for lack of instruction, and in greatness of his folly he will go astray. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. So many, how many times have you heard a woman say, you know, I gave him the best years of my life? There's a bitterness there, and there's a reason to complain. Here's a woman who... She said, took her vows to be there for him. He took his vows to be there. And then, you know, like you have a car and you drive it off the lot new and you're all excited about it. And then, you know, rolls over 100,000 miles and 150,000 miles and start looking at the new models. Ooh, I want to trade it in. And that's the way some fellas treat their wives. And you know what? If he's got money, he's going to be able to turn around and find a younger model. And so that's, and then you have that, I gave him, and the thing is, that younger model's going to get older too. Of course, some of the really wealthy ones, what do they keep doing? They just, and of course they end up being used by people who just want their money and such as that. But it is such a betrayal. And it's, the two shall become one flesh. That's family. How ridiculous would it be if I said, if I, after spending time with the Hamilton boys, if I went home and I just told my son, I said, you know, just hadn't worked out the way I thought. You know, I just don't like this boy of mine as much as, I mean, originally, you know, he was cute little boy and stuff, and I thought he'd play this sport and do this thing and do that, and we'd have, but I'm just not all that happy. I'm going to take one of these boys here. I'm going to get rid of my boy. What everybody say? Of course, you guys aren't really boys now, but let's imagine y'all are a little younger. What everybody say? He says, what are you thinking? But that's exactly what a lot of men do with their wives. Well, I thought it was going to be like, if you don't like the way it is, then make it better. Don't betray your family. I'm going to spend our remaining minutes talking about this. Because there's a huge epidemic problem in this country, not just of men that are out there committing adultery, but this kind of betrayal right here. What did Job say in Job 31? He said, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look on a maid. I hope, I would be very happy if the point I'm about to make is not needed here by anybody. But I've been making this point everywhere I go for several years now. And almost always, there's going to be somebody that needs it. I hope nobody here does. But it won't be a wasted point, even so, because if you've got young children, you need to be aware of this to make sure that they don't get into this. Internet pornography is epidemic in this country and is far too widespread among brethren and is very widespread among young men and boys in the church. I spent some time with about 88 young men down at a camp this year. And these are young men who took a week for intensive Bible study. I mean, it started at like 8 something in the morning, and they would go till about 11 at night with pretty much all day, except for 2.5 hours in the afternoon of recreational time, Bible study, Bible study, Bible study, singing, Bible study, singing, Bible study. They broke for meals. Bible study, you know, preparation, Bible study, assembly, Bible study, you know. It was just... And these were boys who came to this camp knowing that that was what it was going to be like and recommended for it. So these were good kids. And they had one evening free. You know what they wanted to talk about during that free time? Their problem with pornography. Remember, adults, remember when we were kids and we would hear about peeping Toms? Do you remember that? When's the last time you heard about a peeping Tom? I mean, I'm sure there's still a few around, but you don't hear about them as much. You know why? Because people don't have to go out into the bushes and look in people's windows to see it anymore. All they have to do is click. That's why. And instead of it becoming less, it's become more. Let me give you a statistic to give you an idea of how bad it is. Are you familiar with Promise Keepers? The organization, it's a denominational type. It's not a denomination in itself, I suppose, but people from denominations have been affiliated with it. I think it may have a bit of a Pentecostal flavor to it. I'm not sure exactly. But if you've heard of it, you know what it's about, basically. It's people who have some religious convictions, although misguided in some ways, who accept to make promises for their, that they're going to be there for their wives and their kids. There's a survey done, and among the men in Promise Keepers, what do you think the percentage was of these grown men that have joined that organization? What do you think the percentage was that had downloaded internet pornography in the last 6 weeks? 53%. I was out in Oregon talking about this subject, and afterwards a young man came up and said, I need to talk to you. I said, okay, and I scheduled to meet him the next day. A woman comes up with her son. She said, we need to talk to you. Okay, and I scheduled them right after the other fellow. The first fellow comes, and after talking to him, he was about 22, and so he left. Then here came the woman with the 14-year-old boy, and I said, well, at least you haven't been involved in this stuff as long as, you know, some older guys, and I'm thinking because you're so young, you know, it's going to be easier. And then I find out he's already in trouble with the police. He's on probation for having molested his little brother. I said, where'd you learn about that? It's over the internet and things kids said at school. And if it's not a problem in your home, realize it's a problem in neighbors' homes and all around you. Very close, I know details very closely of one situation because it was in some extended family, not blood family, but extended family. And the fellow ended up going to prison. He had been into pornography. One of the things about pornography is people that get into it, they need more and more and more and deeper depravity, so that he got into the bondage stuff and everything. And so he's married to a woman who wants to be there for him and be a loving wife, And he ties her up and chokes her until she loses consciousness. And there's just horrible things going on out there. Huge problem among young people. I've dealt with a fellow, young man wanting to preach, and he called me again and again because of his problem with pornography. Used to, pornography was available, but people had to do what? Go down to some sleazy store and, you know, hope nobody's looking and ask for a magazine behind a counter or something like that. Now, just a click away. The percentages of kids, the kids are introduced to hardcore pornography at young ages. Most teenagers are, I think, if one statistic, I'm not remembering all the numbers right now, but I think it's 83% of a certain age of teenagers have been exposed to, I guess it was internet pornography or some sort of pornography and such. And a lot of them are exposed to hardcore pornography. I think it was between like 11 and 15 or 11 and 13 or something like that. It's a huge problem. Parents of young children, I know that out there in the world, people put TVs in the children's rooms and computers in the children's rooms. I want to ask you something. If your son said, Mom, can I have a hamster in my room? You'd probably say yes. If he said, Mom, can I have an open aquarium with cobras and rattlesnakes in my room? What would you say? Well, I trust him not to reach in there. What would you think? You'd say, no, that's dangerous stuff. Well, you put those connections on there, I've forgotten the percentage, huge number. The pornography industry, I was looking at some statistics on this. The pornography industry, now this includes videos, pornographic movies, internet pornography, escort services, call girls, all that stuff. The pornography industry in this country makes more than the NFL, the NBA, and all the sports things combined. They make more than ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox News, and CNN combined. It's huge. It's big business. The number of downloads, internet downloads, a fellow that knows about computers gave me a statistic recently, and I think he, if I remember what he said last week, that a majority, and he's in the computer business, the majority of all computer downloads are for pornography. In Virginia, state employees in Virginia sued. You know why? Virginia passed a resolution or law, regulations, that said that state employees could not use state computers to download pornography while they were at work. That seems to make sense, you know. If you're a taxpayer in Virginia, do you want to pay people to sit around, you know, down there at the state building and download pornography? I don't think so. So this seems very much to make sense. You're not allowed to use state equipment during work hours to download pornography. They sued. They said it violated their right to free speech. If you don't, and I'm going into this detail because if you don't know how big a problem is out there, you can make a big mistake by putting an internet. Fellas, do you remember when you were 12 and 13 years old and kind of curious about the world and such? Would you have wanted to be trusted with a device that with a click of the button you could enter any level of perversity available? Would you have wanted that available? I wouldn't have wanted that available. And it's not just young people. There's a lot of husbands out there, a lot of grown men out there. There's a lot of hurt women out there when they find out what their husbands have been up to. Just remember our vows. just because somebody's not sleeping with somebody else. What did Jesus say in Matthew 5? If you look upon a woman to lust after, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And fellas, young fellas, someday you're probably planning on being married. Wherever that girl is, do you want her to be on a computer looking at vulgar pictures of fellas right now, other fellas? Or do you want her to be waiting for you? You do the same. When I was down there some of these young men were talking one after another, and some of them saying, well, we've all got this problem. And I had to say something because they didn't all have the problem, but the ones that were talking, and it became almost kind of like, I'm an alcoholic thing, but they weren't getting to the solutions. And one of them talked about, I've got a friend who's so much into it, but he says when he gets married, it won't be a problem. Women don't stop being attractive because you get married. If you're not controlling yourself, you're not controlling yourself. But, this fella would say, well, it all started when I was in my room. It all started when I was in sixth grade and I was in my room watching a commercial came on about a porn video. Well, that tells me that the parents had let a TV be in his room, and not just a TV, but one that's hooked up to cable. How unwise was that? Time after time it started in my room. And so we just pointed out. What does it say in Matthew 5? Right after it says, if a man, looks upon a woman to lust, he's committed adultery in his heart. What does Jesus say next? If your eye offends you, pluck it out. You know what a lot of people need to do with a computer? Pluck it out. You know what a lot of people need to do with a TV? Pluck it out. If somebody is not resisting the temptations that are available there, would it not be better to go into life without cable than with cable go to hell? Would it not be better to, without internet, go into life than with it go to hell? Just remember our vows. Let's think about the perversities out there and protect our children and help them. And let's guard ourselves. For better or for worse, we said. Some people say, well, it ended up being worse. Well, then do something and make it better. But you agree, for better or worse. Romans 1:31, you know who it says is worthy of death? Covenant breakers. We made covenants. Let's keep them. And the beauty of it is, Ephesians 5:28, he that loves his wife loves himself. When the husband and wife become one flesh, they're no more two, they're one. Paul said, no man hated his own flesh. That wife that we asked to be our bride, honor, cherish that wife. He that loves his own wife loves his own flesh. Let's resolve to make sure that our wives know they're honored and cherished. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as you stand and sing?